Esther. Kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's saying in her sleep, brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Ayo's house
in the middle of our street.
Ayo's house.
Isles House, the Stefan Rosner edition. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter at Isles House. Follow each of our hosts. Follow me at Ethan GSN. Follow Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. Follow Jack at Isles Den. Follow producer Greeny at eGreenberg99. Sub to the Patreon. You want access to the most lively Discord server in the universe, as well as access to extra content monthly. Patreon.com/Isles House. Steph, welcome. Before I hand you the microphone, you guys can follow him on Twitter at Stefan_Rosner, Islanders beat reporter for NHL.com and the Elmonters. Go ahead and subscribe to that if you want great stories pretty much every day, right? You're doing stuff every day?
Yep,
okay, yes, every day. Steph, welcome.
Thanks for having me, boys. Really do appreciate it.
All right. So the big news since, I don't know, I think the last episode that we did was the Darche side. Matthew Darche. All right, Steph, let's two-part this here. Give us your personal opinion on the hire, and then give us a little bit of background on everything that went down that people may know, may not know, any interesting tidbits that you've heard.
Yeah, so I think it's a risky hire. Obviously, a first-time general manager, there's a lot of risk involved. That being said, the Islanders need to focus on their prospect pool, developing prospects. This guy's an evaluator. He's a scout by trade. He understands the importance of that, something that maybe Lou Lamoriello didn't care too much about. They were trying to win. They were trading picks. But he's got to replenish this farm system. He's got to work at keeping them aligned with the NHL club and just getting Bridgeport back on track. There's so many young guys coming the next couple of years. It's really important. But I like it. He's young. He obviously has a feel for the game now. He's part of a winning culture. I think all those things are really important. And also, he's a new voice. We saw him, Patrick Waugh came in. He's a new voice. Patrick Waugh's first ever presser. He said, here's all the things we're bad at. We got to get better at. Darche comes in and immediately looks at Bridgeport, cleans house there. We'll see about the assistant GMs, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point. But I think the biggest thing to take away from the process is that it was long. There was a lot of back and forths. And I think at times, certain people were in, certain people were out. I know, obviously, Ken Holland was offered the job. He didn't want it. There were probably other candidates that wanted the job, but Lou still being around, I think for sure played a huge impact on that. But I think it came down to, do we go with Darche? Do we go with a guy that's similar and maybe in just experience like Lou? And I think they really wanted to try to get away from that and go with a newer voice. And I think ultimately, I think Darche sold them. I mean, he's a salesman. He worked on that side of things. And I think he sold management, sold Malkin. It's clear as day when you heard John Collins talking about him. They're in sync about pretty much everything and how you want to run up a Malkin. The biggest thing for Malkin is business. And that's where I think Darche won it out with everybody else, because he will report to Malkin.
Don't everyone go at once. I mean, I do the intro. I did the monologue. I let Steph speak.
I was waiting for Jack's usually our number two. Yeah, I was waiting for him to go here.
No, I'm going to jump
nervous
in.
Nervous to have me, Jack. But
no, I'm going to jump in. I actually wasn't here for the episode where Darche was hired. I haven't left any thoughts yet. So I guess I want to say, as I started out this entire process, Darche became a hot name quickly, and I did shoot it down. And as we got later and later, it was really between Bergevin, it was between Yarmo, and like, I don't know. I just kind of wanted, as Steph alluded to, somebody fresh that hadn't been around the league already. Bergevin scared me just because of all the transactions he did in Montreal. I mean, we're talking about 99 trades in 11 years. Like, I have no idea what this guy would have come in and do. Like, I didn't want Barzal out. I didn't want like Horvat out. So I feel safer with this pick, even though it's a first time general manager. But yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I just don't know how much to take from the Tampa Bay tenure. I'm not going to harp on, you know, like that Tanner Jeannot trade from a few years ago. I'm also not going to like, I don't know. These two teams are just in such different situations, the Islanders and the Lightning. But early on when I was skeptical, I will say in the first round when Florida was playing Tampa, something I noticed was their defensemen. They had just traded Sergachev in the offseason, and they really could not break the puck out of their zone, and Florida was just all over them on the forecheck. Now, it's the Florida Panthers. They're in the Stanley Cup for a reason, so maybe take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, with the defense corps, with the likes of Mayfield, Pelech, Pollock, like, I just don't want to see those types of defensemen crowding the blue line anymore. So I'm curious to see where he goes, see if he learned from maybe moving off of Sergachev. And it's made me really curious on the whole Noah Dobson situation. It just, the Sergachev move makes me think like, okay, he just moved, the Lightning just moved Sergachev. Like, let's see if maybe he learns from that, keeps Dobson, or he parts ways with him too. And it just like might be a philosophy, or he has nothing to do with the entire operation. So it's just kind of like a wait and see, be patient, but definitely more excited for Darsh than anyone else.
Well, you mentioned Sergachev there, and obviously Darsh was involved with all of those transactions, but I think I look at Sergachev more like, what is he going to do with Romanov? That's kind of how I look at it. The physical kind of guy. I don't really compare the Dobson to Sergachev. I get what you're saying there, but I think it's more with Romanov, a guy that's physical guy, block shots. Are you wanting to pay him, or you want to move on from him, get assets back? So yeah, there's a lot of decisions Darsh is going to have to make for sure.
Yeah. And I think good point from Jack on Sergachev, but I think that's also a move they made after signing Gensel, or in order to sign Gensel,
right,
if I remember correctly. So you got to keep that in mind. Like, you went and got a star player, and it sucked you had to give up Sergachev, but there was a reason for it. It wasn't just like a Devon Taves situation where you're just throwing him to the side for picks. It was making room for this stud player that you're bringing into the fold. So yeah, Jack, I agree with a lot of what Jack said. It's just like that wait and see approach. We're all kind of itching to get to the draft and then free agency and see what sort of trades are made. So, you know, you don't know what the track record is. And I think that's what's exciting, but also what's scary, because how much was he involved in those deals? It's still Brisebois's team. But yeah, I mean, again, I've said I like it because it's a new face, but it could go south quickly, or it could be, look really positive quickly. It's going to depend on what he does here.
Well, this is why I like having Steph here, because he's very matter of fact. And with Darsh, what I dislike, and I'm not going to single anyone out here or maybe portions of the fan base, it because of the fact that nobody truly knows what he was responsible for in Tampa Bay, despite, this guy was the cap guru. He's, you know, he's great on the, he's good at this, he's good at that. People pick and choose, and they say, oh, this move that Tampa Bay made was really bad. We don't really know if Darsh was involved. And then they'll point to something really good that they did and go, oh, he had to have been involved. How are you approaching this tenure? And maybe you've heard more about some things he had his hands in down in Tampa, but I'm sure some fans would love some insight into that.
Yeah, I think for any first-time GM, it's not about what you did, it's about what you do, right? He's going to get judged on every move he makes going forward, and I think that's fair. I think you could look back, and like you said, we won't know. I know for a fact he was heavily involved in the development of Braden Point. That's a positive. Obviously, look at the Taylor Janot trade, and if he had any say in that, it's a trade that you look back on, it didn't work out, but when Tampa wants to get one of their guys that they want, they don't care about the picks and stuff. They're trying to win now. So you understand it from that standpoint. But yeah, I think for Darsh, it's finally his team. Judge him on what he does. Because I know, I think a lot of people get caught up in what happened. Even with Bergevin, or anyone that would have came in. It's like, that's what they did. They got the job now. Now they're getting the opportunity to run with it. So I think for Darsh, it's also for time for him to think back and go, what I learned from. Brisebois is one of the best people to learn from. He's right-hand man for that guy. He looked at development. I mean, he wasn't there when they drafted Hedman in the whole deal, but he saw the importance of having a number one defenseman drafted and how it works and how it leads to a winning culture and Stanley Cups. Whereas we'll get into the draft at some point down the line here, but I think he could take bits and pieces of every deal he was part of, every developmental part that he was a huge part of, and just learn from it. So I think for Darts, I know it's such a cliche answer, but I really think for him and his tenure, it's about judging every move he makes that he just made and going forward, because this is his team now and he's never had the opportunity to do this.
Steph, I wanted to ask you on one thing we have seen so far, and that's how Darsh handles the media. Do you expect that to continue throughout, where it's basically a complete 180 from Lou, where he's very active, going on podcasts and whatnot? Or do you think this might just be the beginning and then he settles in and he's kind of not around that sort of thing too often?
Steph, you're going to have to learn French, buddy.
Oh, I know. I'm going to do some Duolingo. But I think for Darsh, I think it was important to be the way he was at his press conference right off the bat. I mean, not only does Horvat have an injury, which we knew it was lower body, but that it's an ankle and then to be out, what was it, 3 to 5 or 4 to 6 weeks? We never got that under Lou. And if Patrick Waugh said it was not supposed to be said, right? And I think that led to a lot of stress. But I think for Darsh, and we spoke to him just off the record after, and he said, listen, like, I'm going to be honest with you guys when I can be. And I think that's something Darsh is going to have to learn. He wants to be friendly with the media. Obviously, getting on the media side is important, especially, you know, just in general. But I think at times, you know, I'm not someone that believes that fans deserve to know everything. I know a lot of fans think they do, but I'm in the mindset of, Like, look at the Rupe hints in the playoffs. Obviously, everyone knew he had an injury to the top of his foot, right? But let's say that he just left that game later on. No one really knew exactly what happened. You look at the Bouchard whack. You know, that happens after if everyone finds out that he has an injury there. So I think at times it's really important for him to not divulge information as much as we really want that info. But I think for sure it'll be more lenient than Lou. I think going on podcasts is important. The Islander fan base, whether they're even if they're not going to be good or playoff team this upcoming year, being honest with the fans, I mean, that's what they've been longing for. And I think that respect, he's got to, like I said, he's got to earn everything going forward. And I think being as outspoken as he was and with the media and with the talking to the fans, I think that's so important. You have to build a relationship. And I think that's something Lou didn't do with the fan base. And Darch understands how important that is to selling tickets. And I think at the end of the day, this is a business.
Well, let me just follow up on Rocco's media podcast question. What did you take away from those podcasts? Because personally, I didn't really love what I was hearing, because when asked about who is the core of this team, he rattled off basically every single player, including a handful, which a lot of fans, had Lou maintained his GM position, expected to be moved in the offseason. And now I think there may be the water might be a little muddy.
Yeah, I think everything is an illusion until it's not, right? I think, you know, Lou always spoke, everything Lou said was calculated. Whether it sounded good or bad, he said the exact words on purpose for some other meaning. And I think for Darch, he's got to learn exactly how to, he didn't deal with the media too much in Tampa, but I think, you know, listing out the core players, if he did not include Dobson in the core players, there goes leverage. If he did not include Romanov, leverage. If he, any name he doesn't include, there goes leverage. The same way, you know, he said you have to knock your socks off for the first overall pick. Once he said he's open to trading the pick, all leverage goes out the window. So I wouldn't take all of it to heart. I do believe some of those names are obviously part of your core because of long-term contracts, but I would be hesitant to listen, to think about every word and take it at face value, because Darch is a smart man. Again, he's in sales and business, so I think he knows what he's doing. And I just think he's going to play his hands close to his vest, even if it seems like he's, you know, cards are up, face up on the table, and everyone can see him.
So, what obviously Darch's first moves were re-signing Palmieri and Boqvist. And already, believe it or not, I've already seen a portion of the fan base that's like up in arms, already annoyed. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I did. And, like, honestly, I can't believe that we're already doing this. Like,
Jack is subtweeting you live on a podcast.
Dude, yeah, it's not like, just say his name, dude. Just say
it's really not just – it's not just Ethan. I'll give this to Ethan. I didn't see him once write fire Darsh. I've already seen that sentence on Isle's Twitter, which is just absolutely insane. But, yeah, those moves, like, what did you think of them in terms of, like, do you think those deals were done before – like, do you think those are the right moves?
Yeah, so let's start with, do I think they were done before? Boqvist, I think both of them were really close to getting done. Now, I could tell you for certainty, Palmieri's was not done. I maybe it was close. Maybe there was a number agreed upon, right? In my head, if it's agreed upon, you send it in. Like, I don't know. Everyone believes that Lou holds on. The reason those things don't get announced is because Lou's saying we're not announcing it. Those could be done, like, Hudson Fashing's contract, I believe, was done months prior before they announced it the day after media availability, right? So I don't think it's a sense of like he's holding on to them and not 100% completing them. But I could tell you with a fact, Palmieri's camp hoped it would be done. It never got over that finish line. And Darch, over the week that he was on before that announcement, it got done. And for both deals, I look at Boqvist, slam dunk move. Obviously, he's an RFA. You bring him back. Clear as day, Patrick Waugh loved him. He does have to get a little better at the defensive side, but I've never seen a defenseman be below the dots or the hash marks as much as Boqvist was, and he filled it in forward. So his mobility and his ability to evade defenders and break the puck out, I mean, you talked about it, Jack, where you don't want these defensemen that are slow. Like, Boqvist is the definition of a guy that could play the Waugh system to a T. But that was a great move. Then you look at Kyle Palmieri, and we go back and forth whether it was a big enough discount. A couple of things I look at, he wants to be here. You're probably spending that much to get the same kind of production from a guy in free agency that maybe you don't get that doesn't know. And also, I think it's a long-term game. I know Palmieri is a two-year deal, but I personally think he's going to play with Cal Ritchie this year, or at least be a mentor for Cal Ritchie. We talk about, you know, play drivers and passengers, and not passengers in the sense that they don't do anything, right? Passengers in the sense that Palmieri needs someone to distribute the puck to him. And I think Ritchie and Palmieri, I just think it's an important relationship. The same way I look at Adam Pellick and whether it's Isaiah George or Matthew Schaefer, we know Matthew Schaefer is going to skate with Pellick this summer. You know, that's starting to build that mentor mentee role. So I think for Palmieri, it's about a guy that wants to be here. You lost Brock Nelson's production, so you're going to need it. But also, I think they really do look at Palmieri as a leader for these younger guys, and building that culture that winning culture and getting rid of that country club, whatever you want to call it. I think with all these young guys coming in, to have Poms for 2 years at the value it is what it is, I think it's going to benefit the club long term, even way after Palmieri's gone.
I agree. I think it's important to surround like the upcoming players, like Richie, even Iserman when he gets here, Nelson. Make sure they're surrounded by actual talent, not just by role players and just being on like this terrible rebuilding team. And lastly, like, do you feel like those moves are, well, any of you guys can answer this. Do you feel like those moves are a sign that not much is going to change this offseason? Because it's really early, and I still feel like there's a lot that's going to be done, and partially because I feel like ownership wanted to hear that there was going to be changes pretty imminently. And that's just because of the empty seats at the end of last season, the happiness of the fan base. Like, I just don't see a stagnant offseason ahead of us.
So I'll just jump in quicker. I actually think the complete opposite. I think the dam. I think he's going to do a lot
Steph.
Of. Thank you. Good minds. But I think a lot of. I think it's evaluation. I wrote about it at the Almonters. Whereas obviously fans want to clear cap space for Marner and for Ehlers and trade one of Mayfield, Pulak, or Pellick and trade Pageau and maybe trade Lee. Like, I think he's going to evaluate this team. I think at least the first half of the year, I think you're going to see the bigger changes happen at the deadline with guys on expiring deals. Like a Pageau, I don't think Lee's going anywhere. I do think he'll get an extension of some sort. But like a guy like Cizikas, maybe that's when you move Mayfield. So I think the deadline and the next year's draft is when you're going to see a lot of things happen. But this summer, I think it's more about, one, signing as many of these college free agents as possible for Bridgeport. You don't need the older players that aren't helping to develop down there. So surround the younger prospects with collegiate players. I think that's number one. But number two, the Islanders have a lot of depth players. We talk about it a lot. The Fashings, the Gackhams, the McLeans. But they lack the talent, the offensive talent that a lot of other teams have that make them deep. I mean, the one thing Dart said is he pretty much wants to mimic the Panthers or the Tampa when they won the cup, where they suffocated. Or look at Barry Trotz's teams, right, where they suffocate you on the forecheck. And I think going out there and getting bottom six players that could score but also do that effectively, like for me, given his relationship to Dart, you know, Yanni Gourde before he got the extension, and obviously that extension's a long thing, but you could do that in Florida, and you know what you're kind of get out of him, and those last 3 years, those deals are going to suck. But guys like that, where they just are pain in the butt to play against. I think we'll talk later about potential free agents, have a list of a couple of guys, but I think that's where Darch is going to do stuff this summer, is just elevate their depth because they have the talent. I mean, they have the talent outside the finisher, but I don't think the Islanders are going to have the cap space to pull off the moves that the Islander fans want. And I think it's just smart where let Darch evaluate how bad the situation or how good it is. I remember too, I'll just say the story, when Barry Trotz came back to Long Island for the first time, we all got to talk to him. He spoke for an hour. And I remember I asked him a couple of questions, but one question I asked him was, why did you go to a defensive system? Because remember, in Washington, it wasn't a defensive system. He looked at the team in Washington, got Ovechkin to backcheck, and they won a cup. And he said, well, the funny thing is the forwards weren't as good as they told me they were, and the defense wasn't as bad. So I evaluated the team, looked on paper, but looked at their games, said that this is the way we're going to play. This is how I'm going to, you know, obviously he couldn't build the team. He had Lou here, but that's in vision. For Darch, he has the power to build a team. So I think what he's going to do is get the depth guys he can. We surround some of these stars with maybe just more stable guys. And then come halfway through the year, evaluate Patrick Waugh, evaluate the players that you feel are part of your core. Like you said, he mentioned his core the other day, but halfway through the year, that could change. I know he has to sign contracts and RFAs, but I just think a lot of the changes are going to happen second half of next year and next summer, not really this summer.
Well, I agree with you. I don't agree with the premise, and you can tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth here, that it's the right move. You think that that's the smart move, or you think that that's just what's going to happen based on the tea leaves? Because I think that's just what's going to happen based on the tea leaves. I don't think it's right. The right move.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've seen this team, right? So I think the easy answer to say is what do you need evaluation for? We know what this team's been for the last couple of years.
Right. You have a head coach who's been here for a year and a half. Like, he knows who's good and who's not and who can play a system and who
exactly.
Can't. And I'll even add on top of that, because the next topic that we have here in our little rundown we want to discuss with you is incoming assistants, changes to the scouting department, things of that nature. Again, like, Patrick Waugh is a guy who came in here. He was handicapped his first half season, not being able to choose his staff. Going into his first full year, the only staff member he was able to choose was Benoit DeRozier. And now you're going into season, call it 2.5, where which assistant of quality is going to want to come here after seeing what this team was the last year, 2 years? Like, I understand wanting to maybe evaluate the team while they're healthy, for instance. But I really
That's what I was going to add. Right. Tea leaves. That's clearly what Dart said.
Yeah. But I personally just don't think that much inside evaluation is needed. You want to keep the scouting staff because you got hired late. The draft is coming up 100%. Understand. You know, you want to take your time hiring an assistant GM or you know, figuring out who's going to run Bridgeport. All right, fine. I understand. But again, this was part of my spiel in some podcasts leading up to the hiring and even after the hiring, where you have a GM. He's never done this before. He's got to figure out Noah Dobson. He's got to figure out Alex Romanov. He's got to figure out, like, his entire bottom six. Now he's got to fill out two coaching staff spots. Like, it's a lot. And maybe that's part of it, and there's too much to do in too little time. But, like, at this point, I'd say the only players whose ceilings we don't really know are maybe, like, Simon Holmstrom, who's still 23 years old, right? Like, we sort of understand what everyone is on this roster, and that this roster, even if healthy in a bad metro, like, all right, maybe they squeak into the playoffs, but it's not good enough. And an ownership group that wants changes and wants to compete and sell tickets, and we all know about their financial situation. It just, to me, it seems like I need to evaluate is a cop-out.
Yeah, it's very possible. And he could also blame Lou. I mean, I don't know if he will, but he has that handicap where he could blame Lou if things go south because it's Lou's team. But I think more for Darch, in the sense of, like, this is his first time. He wants to make sure he does it right. He knows how much he has to fix. So I think rather than going and getting, I mean, obviously getting a Marner Ehlers, but spending a ton of money, trading people immediately, I think he needs a second to sit down, take a breath, and be like, okay, how bad is it? Or maybe it's not as bad as everybody thinks. Again, we're, you know, whether you're fans or whether you're media, everyone's got different viewpoints, and he's coming from an unknown. So I think maybe more to the benefit, not saying the team deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's been whatever years, but I think for Darch, if he's going to make big changes off the bat, I think he at least wants to be 110% sure that that's the direction, because he has to set the direction. He obviously wants to win or make the playoffs. He said that at his presser, but I think it's also about he has to develop. There's no way around. You have to develop. You got to get younger, faster, and have a place where prospects don't go to die. So I think for Darch, there's a lot he has to do. So I think the evaluation time is more of like letting him just kind of slowly put his feet in. Because I think if he jumps in and does all the crazy stuff, it could, again, the whole part of this is the long-term game as well. And I don't think he wants to jeopardize the long-term game, maybe 1 year where they're really good and come second in the Metro. I think if that happens, great. But his focus, I think, is on doing this right, which is hence the evaluation time.
Yeah, but don't... It's all good points, Steph, but don't you also think because he has to give these, in all likelihood, long contracts to these young players, he's almost, because of the numbers game, he's going to have to make some decisions on guys like Peugeot, guys like Cizikas. You know, if you do go ahead and draft Matthew Schaefer one overall, even if he doesn't play this year, you know he's very close. Do you try to get out of ahead of it with one of the defensemen being moved out? We know he has a lot of trade clauses to deal with, and that's where I think what you were getting at when you meant blame Lou. Because when you take a step back and look at it, like when you go on the Puckpedia, it's going to be hard, right? Like a lot of these guys, he might not even have a choice. I mean, who has full no trades? We got Bullock, Mayfield. I think a couple of the forwards do as well. So I think he might sort of have to move just at least one or two veterans to create just some flexibility, because if you lock in Dobson, you lock in Romanov, and suddenly it's a quote-unquote evaluation year, but you're basically a cap team, you're limiting your flexibility come the deadline because you can't hold as much cap and there's only so much you can do. So I understand the theory of not going crazy and trading five or six names, but maybe it's more me wanting, but my expectation is also that he does move just a couple just to give him a bit of a head start on what you said he should be doing come the deadline.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, listen, I could be completely wrong, right? And it, again, what I said before with, you know, he's saying things, but it could be calculated. All of this could be calculated. I think you look at, like you said, the clauses, like for me, if you ask me who is the most likely to get traded this summer, I'd probably tell you Cizikas. No trade protection. He's like the only veteran. Mayfield as well. If the Islanders went to Mayfield and said, hey, you're not going to be part of our starting six next year, he's waiving.
But he's a full no trade, correct?
Yeah. But yeah. Right, but if he's not going to play,
right,
you can't go to Pulak and say you're not part of our six. Like, obviously he is. Mayfield, given what happened last year and his relationship with Wah, whatever the case may be, you might be able to move a guy out of that. So, yeah, I think if he can get hard starts, he will, but I don't think he's going to go do anything crazy. I don't think trading Mayfield would be crazy. I think
no, I agree.
You know, yeah. So, but again, who knows what Darsh is actually thinking? I think he's learned from really good people that know how. I mean, he sat with Lou for 3 and 4 hours, and we could sit here and, you know, obviously Lou does what he does, but there's a method to everything Lou does. And I think if Darsh is smart, he might take a little bit of it, not the facial hair policy and the numbers, but, you know, keeping it fun. But also, I think Darsh knows, you know, words are taken and it's about action. I think he's got to be smart about how he says things, even on podcasts, even if he sounds genuine. He could be lying right to all of us, which, again, if it works out for the better of the Islanders' future or current team, go for it. That's kind of his job at this point now.
I do have a quick question before we move on. Since we're talking about roster construction, I mean, we know the fragmented relationship that Wah and Lou had in the past. I think Darsh met Wah for the first time right after he was hired. Do we know how much of an impact or a say that Patrick Wah might have on roster construction or player evaluation going forward?
Yeah, we don't have an exact thing. I think people are overestimating how much Wah is going to have a say in everything. But this is my mindset, and I think every coach and GM should be like this in the league. Is if you have a coach that plays a certain way, like I always go back to the Barry Trotz, like I just said, he came in, looked at the roster, changed it. When Patrick Wah came in, he said, we're playing this way. If you can't play the way I want you to play, you're not playing. When you have a coach like that, that doesn't have another, like, there's no Patrick Wah 2.0 in how he's going to play the games. Like, that's all he knows. That's how he's going to play it. So if you are bringing Patrick Wah back, you got at least have, not even a say, but you know exactly what players Wah needs. And I think Wah never got the chance to do this with Lou, but give a list of, hey, these players could play my way. These players can't. Now it's up to you to figure it out. I don't think they ever got to that point with Lou. Whereas with Darsh, I think that conversation could happen. Now, Wah understands that that's not going to be night and day. And like Rocco said, with the clauses, it's really hard. But I think more so now, Patrick Wah is going to say, listen, like, this player cannot play the way I need him to play. Or listen, this player in free agency is someone, you know, we talked about the Duclair thing, obviously, that didn't work out. But, you know, I think Wah is going to have a say. It's not going to be as much. It's going to be up to Darsh trusting Wah. But if you have a coach that's stuck in his ways on how he's going to play and you brought him back, You might as well give them players, whether it's younger players, whether it's players you draft too, that you think, okay, in a couple of years, they could play Wah's system. You got to play to that, because there's no point in bringing Wah back if you're not going to provide him with the players needed for his system to succeed.
100%.
We're moving on.
I didn't realize I let Ethan talk. So that's good.
Yeah. Hey, you know, someone's got to bring some levity to this conversation.
There you go.
I guess next on the rundown, what's next when we're talking about assistant coaches? Obviously, John McClain, Tommy Abilene, who were Lou guys, not coming back anymore. Do we have any ideas, any context into who they're looking at for assistants? Is Lou actually going, or not Lou? I keep wanting to say Lou.
This is why they don't let you talk.
Exactly. Is Wah going to actually have a say this time in his assistants?
Oh, I think he's going to have a say without a doubt. Now, Darsh would have to believe that person's not going to grab Joe Schmo or his brother off the street. But I look at coaches that didn't get the head coaching jobs. I kind of want to, you know, show that, hey, I'm like Jay Woodcroft for me. Someone that hasn't gotten a coaching job. He obviously coached Edmonton. He understands, you know, maybe is this a chance for him to be an assistant, or a Pascal Vincent, who was coach of the year for Laval, just getting on a bench, an NHL bench again, and showcase what they could do. But I look back at his time in Colorado, and Andre Turigny, or however you pronounce it, who's the Utah head coach now, obviously he's not available, but I looked at, Dave Farish, who's a scout with St. Louis now, he was on his staff in Colorado. I'm wondering if he would want to get back into coaching. Tim Army, who was on Anaheim's staff, but they fired their, you know, they have Quenneville coming in. Is he going to keep him? So look at those guys' potential possibilities. Other names, Dave Hackstall. But yeah, Jay Woodcroft, to me, I don't know, for some reason, he just didn't get a head coaching job this term around. Maybe he's willing to take that chance as being an assistant and then maybe try to get a job next summer. I think it's important to have people that have experience. And I don't think you need, like, you look at the NFL, it happens all the time where former head coaches become assistants. It happens often. So I think for the Islanders, especially when it comes to Darsh and getting his assistant GMs on board, having guys that hold those positions before, even higher positions that, you know, just fit. You need as many voices, new voices, but intelligent people. And I don't think there's, you know, there's some teams that have like 5 or 6 assistant coaches or 4 or 5 assistant GMs. And I think for Darsh and especially for Patrick Wah, you have to get guys that gel. But yeah, all the top guys that didn't get head coaching jobs would be the first people I would be calling for assistant gigs, as long as Wah could work with them.
There's also there was a former Syracuse Crunch head coach, another French Canadian
guy.
Of course,
he's pushing the Crunch.
Of course.
No, he needs to like write up the box scores for the Crunch. He pushes the Crunch.
No, but hear me out for a second.
It might as well be Crunch House.
Hear me out for a second. Benoit Giroux. I don't know how to say his name. He was the Crunch head coach for a million years. He was there when Sorelli, Eric Chernak, Matthew Joseph, whatever, had a lot of success. I think he worked for Team Canada as well. He left the organization a couple years ago, but he was there when Julien Brisebois and Darche were working really closely with the Crunch. So I'm wondering if that could potentially be a fit. Again, just throw names out there.
No, okay.
What about – and who else was from the Crunch that was mentioned?
Jeff Halpern, who's a former okay. Crunch assistant. Yeah.
Jeff Halpern, funny enough, was on the Caps when Ledecky and Malkin owned the Capitals or part owners. So there's a relationship there. But you mentioned the Crunch. We might as well stick on this topic. Stacey Roost, who left, who was their development. You know, I'm not sold that he's joining the Islanders. That being said, boy, could they use him. I mean, that.
Let's talk about that situation for a second.
Yeah.
Darche gets hired. This guy all of a sudden doesn't work for the team. Is this simply a matter of they're waiting to fire Chris Lamoriello and then he's here or what?
Yeah. So what I can say is that I don't think Stacey left Tampa because he's taking the Islanders job. I think he has a really good fit there, and it's not really moving up in terms of the world. Maybe if he's an AGM, but I think it would work out. I think Stacey, I mean, you look at LA, you go to LA, there's other options. I think maybe it was just time to move on from Tampa. But yeah, I think, you know, you look at the Chris Lamoriello thing and the Steve Pellegrini, and people love to group these guys together. And I think everyone's got to stop doing that. I know that Steve Pellegrini will get grilled for all the Lou contracts. That's Pete Pellegrini's job. Make the cap work, be in the negotiation. So people say, well, if Pellegrini is the reason why the Islanders are in cap hell, like, why would you let him stay as an AGM? If anyone knows anyone that works for Lou, like, their job is to make things work that Lou wants to work. And I think that actually adds more credibility to Pellegrini that through everything with Lou, he found a way to keep the Islanders cap compliant. And maybe the contracts weren't amazing, but, you know, this guy helped write the original CBA and the salary cap. And also with the Islanders not hiring someone above Darche, I think having a guy like Pellegrini, one who knows every single move that Lou made. So if Darche has any questions about anything, Pellegrini is your guy. And also just serve as a mentor. Forget where you are ranking wise by name. I think Pellegrini is a smart guy. And if you let Pellegrini go, he's hired within minutes from another organization. Now, Chris Lamoriello, I think he gets a lot of blame that's not his fault, given the fact that I don't say he didn't do much. And I think you look at the failures of minor league teams and his track record's terrible. Yeah, obviously you can't ignore that. But he did what he was told to do. And I don't think he should stay as the GM, as the Bridgeport GM. I'm not trying to say that at all. But I think if you're Darche and you come in, you clean house immediately. I think you don't want to publicly. I think there's too much respect for Lou. Like, they weren't going to do it at the press conference. I'll tell you that Steve Pellegrini was at Darche's press conference. Chris Lamoriello wasn't. By the way, contrary to popular belief, Lou also wasn't there. I know there was a tweet going around that he was. That's false. Unless he was hiding in the
vents. I know who sent that tweet.
Yeah, we all do. Unless he was hiding in the vents, but I mean, he is in good shape at 82. Maybe he was hanging, but yeah. So I think Chris Lamoriello, whether they did sign multi-year extensions during the year, it wasn't, hey, Lou, you're fired. And then he signed these guys. I think people also believe that's the case. That's not true. I don't know when it happened during the year, but it did happen during the year. Lou probably had an inkling that maybe things were going south and he's going to do the power. I mean, he got the power to do this. So I don't think anyone should be mad at Lou for doing that.
I'm mad at Lou.
I just have this fucked up visual in my head right now because Steph is talking about Lou hanging from the vents during the press conference. That combined with the video of him smoking a dart walking with John Collins. All I'm thinking about right now is that scene from, oh my God, now I'm like blanking on the movie. With Vince Vaughn, with the college.
Oh,
with the frat,
old school.
Old school, where Vince Vaughn's hanging from the rings with the cigarettes in his mouth. We need someone in the Isles House to Discord the photo.
We can get that done real quick.
Or he's the cat from The Office in the fire drill episode.
Yeah, just fire hanging episode. From the ceiling. Yeah.
But to go back to the point, yeah, I think if Chris does remain, it'll be a situation where you saw like Gar Snow and go coat. Like, I don't think he's going to be doing that job. But also, it's also possible that he does stay there and just Darche is telling him what to do and he has to listen to Darche. I think that's probably third on the list of things. I think if you're clearing house in Bridgeport, you're clearing house in Bridgeport for a reason. But yeah, people talk about the money. Well, if you have to, like, the money is, I know the Islanders might not be in the financial spot they want to be in, but it's so minute in, like, I don't think the money is going to be the deciding factor of keeping Chris. Like I said, I think they should keep Steve, but I think if Chris is back, he'll be repurposed somewhere else Darch completely understands how much Bridgeport needs an overhaul, so I don't think he's going to keep someone there that's really not helped allow prospects to develop.
They didn't give Chris a contract. They gave him an annuity.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what happened to that.
All right, what's next?
What is the vision for this team, Steph? And what we mean by that is when the Darche hire was made, a lot of people were thinking there's still this win now mandate from the owners that Darche has to go for it now. Or is it more of that evaluation, long-term outlook? We don't want a one and done team. We want a wide open window here.
Yeah, I think he's going to evaluate, but also I think he's going to hope they make the playoffs. You look at the Metro and the wild card race, and I know what he said at the press that the Islanders should have made the playoffs last year. And it's hard, injuries aside, obviously the blown leads. If they're 10% better on the power play and 10% better on the PK in the first half, they're making the playoffs probably. It's not ideal. They're not a cup contender. Maybe they win a couple of games in round one, but they're probably not getting past round one, depending on the matchup. But I do think there's so much, I don't think there's any benefit to missing the playoffs ever. I know you could talk about, well, the draft picks, like,
I
financially
agree.
getting butts in the seats, the
Unless you win
players
the
that are
lottery.
there. Right. But the players there, like Barzal doesn't want to, you know, if you have the opportunity to tell Barzal, hey, you have a chance to fight for a cup and just get playoff experience or go home and have to watch on your couch. Mentally, these guys need to, you know, not making the playoffs this year is going to hurt these guys mentally. Maybe that's what they need to get a kick in the butt. But, you know, there's, and then also free agents, you know, making the playoffs and not making the playoffs is a huge thing for a lot of free agents. This isn't MLB or the NBA where it's just about making money. Remember the funniest thing when they had the pandemic and they were interviewing the NBA players, we have to stay in our hotel rooms, and Pastrnak said, I'll just bring a mattress to the rink. Like, these guys genuinely love it, and they want to go to teams, they want to win the cup, that's their goal. So I think making the playoffs is so important for so many reasons. So if he could evaluate and the Islanders could be in the race, maybe the deadline go and get one or two gap guys or trade guys away but still be in the race, you know, kind of what Lou tried to do this year. Trade Brock Nelson, and but hope they were still hoping they made the playoffs. It just didn't work out. But I think for Darche, it's, hey, let's see if we can get in while I'm evaluating. That's a plus. But I don't, again, I think there's going to be an evaluation period, and if they get in, they get in. But if not, I don't think it's the end of the world for Darche. If you have to take two steps back, which fans don't want to hear, to take leaps forward and have a prospect pool that's, you know, they come here and they're ready to play. In a couple of years, you're looking at this roster going from maybe middle of the pack in sort of age to one of the youngest, but they have the experience. You know, that's the other thing too is, you know, you come to the Islanders organization, and if you're a young player, and there were years where they were just bad. I mean, when I was growing up, when you guys were growing up, they were bad.
Horrible.
Imagine being a player on that team. Imagine being a youngster. Like, there's a lot of players in Bridgeport, you know, you watch them, they play, and it's body language and everything, and maybe talking to a couple of the prospects. Like, I felt so bad for them because they weren't put in a position to even understand what winning was like. I think when these new wave of prospects come in here, whether it's watching the big club every night and seeing how hard they work and the work ethic, or just being in Bridgeport, they need to feel like winning is a part of the culture. And I think that's solely what Darche needs to focus on, is reset the culture for the youngsters coming in while also doing your best to navigate a metro where you really can make the playoffs, not having the best team possible. You want to win a cup, but I think not leveraging your future and making the playoffs is the best of both worlds. But also, I think Islander fans are tired of just waiting until game 81, game 82 to get in. However, you know, I could see that happening again this year, as long as the future that doesn't happen again.
All right, so it's the mushy middle.
Mushy middle.
Well, I think what Steph, go ahead, Jack.
The thing is I really like the way everything has gone down, and I feel like it's almost karma of how you're supposed to manage like a professional sports team in terms of you're not tanking, you're not blowing it all up, but you know, then you naturally miss the playoffs once you're over the hump, and boom, you land the first overall pick. You
That
trade
helps.
away one of your veteran players at the trade deadline for a top-tier prospect. And you get a steal in the draft the year before, trading up just a little bit in the first round. So personally, like I want them to stay competitive. Like I want them to add like maybe a guy or two here and there. Like I wouldn't mind a backup goalie, like even an overpay on a backup goalie that's really a good one, like a guy like Dan Vladar in Calgary I mentioned the other day. And this is because Sorokin's like an 8-year investment. I'm tired of running this guy into the ground and getting mad at him, quite honestly, when it's not even his fault. The guy's playing way too much. So we need to definitely fix that. And I like bringing back Palmieri. And I think there will be a few more signings this offseason. I don't know if it's going to be Marner or Ehlers, but after watching the playoffs, like I think of like a guy like Granlund who can come in, maybe fill a top six role for the next few years. And then once Yzerman's ready, once Richie's ready to take the next step, they go from being competitive to now they're young and competitive. And then I just think it goes up from there. So I'm happy with the state of the team, and I hope that they do what you say. And they're kind of, you know, like they're evaluating, they're making changes, but they're also remaining in the mix.
Well, you essentially say what I said, you know, get stopgap players.
Yeah.
That the grit that could teach these youngs, like to me, Palmieri, a 2-year deal, that's a stopgap. I know he's been here, but you want a guy here that could, you know, be a difference maker for young guys. And then when they're young guys are ready, they move, because there's too many guys signed long-term. People talk about it's impossible to rebuild, but yeah, no, that's what you said it to is going forward. Like you want to make sure that if you sneak in this year, you don't have to ever sneak in going down the line the next 5, 6, 7 years.
Okay. Can I say something? Because again, Steph, to your credit, you're a straight shooter. You're very realistic. And you know, if you weren't here and I were to say this, Rocco and Jack would just be like, oh, you're a miserable prick. I understand the need for that type of, I don't even want to call them stopgap, right? Because it's like eventually that's
offensive,
crop,
but yeah,
that not necessarily, because there are some situations where you're bringing a guy in for a 1 or 2 year deal and he is a stopgap. Okay. But we're talking about a roster that like Barzell is not some like young guy anymore. Like he's a veteran. Right. Horvat's a veteran. Lee's a veteran. Pajot's a veteran. Cizikas is a veteran. Pulock, Pelech, Mayfield. Veterans, Sorokin, like these, this is a team of veterans. There's a reason that Bridgeport's barren. There's a reason why only in as recent as this middle of this past season, we got excited about, you know, these up and coming kids. Like to me, like the leadership is there. Like you can get rid of a Palmieri or a Cizikas or a Pajot and still have that leadership there. Right. So like for me, like if you're going to go that, if you're going to go that stopgap route, and like I know people were before yesterday, people were throwing around the Yanni Gord name, you know, guys like that. I don't know. Call me a curmudgeon. I'd rather you just be like, they're just looking for bodies, because like this team has leadership and tons of it.
Right. And I think goes one to, you know, what I said before with Palmieri, especially is that for the production he has, you're probably paying someone that's not accustomed to the team with that. But also think too, it's if you sign Palmieri back, maybe that you do move a Pajot. I'm not saying they won't do that. I just think they might want to wait, leverage, and use that to their advantage. But yeah, they can move a Cizikas Pajot this summer, and maybe a guy like Palmieri even's more valuable in that room. Obviously, he wore an A and split it with Pulock. But no, you make the right decision, is the right call here, in the sense of this team's a veteran team. So why are you adding, like, you don't have to bring back every veteran. But I do think there's value in Palm. I just think all the reasons I said it makes a lot of sense. But no, it's, I mean, you make a great point, Ethan. I think like the same thing with evaluation. You know what this team is.
Right.
You know, so why are we wasting time evaluating when you could take the next step as a franchise? I just think with Darch, he's going to not play it safe, but I think he wants to do it right and not benefit the doubt. But hey, if I'm going to move on from a player like this, let me make sure like he can't be a part of it, or this guy can. Maybe, you know, it's like anyone that comes in here where you have to prove to me there's no loyalty. And I think that's a benefit.
Right. All right. So I have one a bit more specific question where pat myself on the back, kudos to me, is going to transition us perfectly into our next segment of who stays and who goes. There's been a lot of debate about Pajot.
Yeah.
I, of everyone on this podcast, will get your take, but of the regulars here, I am more confident than others that he's on this roster come week one. I think his production as a half point per game 3C is very underappreciated by the fan base. I know he's had some injuries. I know it looks like at points last season he may have lost the step a little bit. I think for a team that is clearly looking to compete, throwing Richie in at 3C just right into the deep end could be a bit of a tough assignment for him, and fans may be disappointed with his production if that's the case. Do you see a world in which he starts at wing next to Pajot? Do you think they just make Richie 3C? Maybe they keep Barzell and Horvat together and make Richie 2C? I don't know what, you know, Patrick Waugh is thinking, but I'm curious how you think those two fit next year.
Yeah, so I think the biggest question is, where is Barzal playing? One of the things that always stood out when we were talking to Patrick Waugh is when he put Sipokov on a line with Horvat in the game. We were asking about it, and he said, listen, Sipokov and Horvat's a better give-and-go kind of player. Barzal is more of a puck carrier. To me, Barzal's a center. I get he had a good year on the wing.
I agree.
And I think, especially when you lose a guy like Brock Nelson, very simple fix. You put Barzal back there. And I think Horvat is a better give-and-go kind of guy, and you need to get peace, and everyone's going to say, well, if you put Barzal at center, you got to find wingers as well. Like Holmstrom and Barzal didn't work there. They played like 10 games together. But that's also because Holmstrom didn't really understand enough of how to play with a guy like Barzal, where I could see that working. Or maybe you look at other areas or Palmieri. But I think for Richie, I don't think he's going to go to wing because I think he's a center. Like I said before, I think he is a distributor. You want him in the center of the ice. That's where he makes his magic. But I think for Pageau, Pageau could be your 4C if you trade a Cizikis. I think Pageau is going to be here because I think just you might get more for him, and you won't have to eat any cap if you trade him at the deadline or before the deadline. Whereas if you did it this past year, you're probably going to have to retain, and the Islanders don't want to be doing that. So I think Pageau, I think it's more likely Pageau is here than Cizikis, if we're being honest.
Makes sense to me.
I think the part I just don't see an NHL team paying their fourth line center $5 million.
But
And
don't worry about that because the numbers, everyone gets caught up in numbers, and it's all about the value, right? He was paid $5 million. You look at nowadays, a guy that he led the team that was first place in the faceoff dot. He was a career high. He showed you.
even then, just to interject, Steph,
Yeah.
like if you, okay, so your 4C is making five and change. All right, but your 3C is going to be making what? 900,000,
Right.
850. So like the numbers are fine.
Yeah. And that's like when you look at like a Scott Mayfield, for example, where he gets 3.5 million, people are calling that's crazy. Whatever it is, like for his value, I mean, he's getting paid more. I mean, people won't believe that, but if he was a free agent, if he got to free agency last year, he's making more than that. Just the
Right.
role. It's just, so I think for Pageau, forget how much he's making because it's done. Like everyone with Anders Lee, 7 year, the seven annually, it's like that's what he got paid. So everyone, you could complain about all you want, but look at last year. He today's day and age, he's a free agent this summer. Maybe his age plays a part. He's getting more than seven. That's how the market works for a guy that does that. So I think for Pageau, I don't think it's a problem that he's making more. It's I think we also Islander fans as well, you got caught up in what the fourth line was, right? The fourth line wasn't the talent. So everyone got caught up in that. But in today's day and age, look at Panthers. Like their fourth line could be a third line. Their third line could be a second line. So I think when you got to get away from your fourth line having to be not great at scoring and just these physical guys. Like if the Islanders are gonna have success going forward, you could see a fourth line of Danny Nelson, Callum Ritchie, and some other speeds, or a Gakkum, for example, just throwing it out there. It doesn't have to be a line that's the typical fourth line, a line that has offense. I think the best teams have offense from up and down the lineup. So I think we get, and I'm not blaming you, Jack. It's just we had the fourth line for so long where there was physical forechecking. That's not how every fourth line is anymore. I think we're getting away from that in today's NHL.
Definitely.
And Steph, you mentioned a few forwards there. Now let's focus on the defense. If you had to pick one name from this defense group that you would think could be traded this summer, who would be at the top of that list?
And
I
I
think.
just want to add real quick, I also want you to tell us what you think the return compensation will be.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think Scott Mayfield's the easiest if they go to him and say you're not going to play. Now he's got obviously years left on his deal. I think the Islanders would, depending on what team. I know Toronto was a team that was really interested at the deadline. But the question is, what's the retainment? So obviously, there's more value if the Islanders are going to retain, right? There's years left on his deal. But I think for the Islanders, you're just trying to get him off the books, right? So maybe a third. It all depends what team Scott's going to do, but I think maybe a third round pick for the Islanders is just getting rid of the cap space and allowing the youngsters to play. So maybe a third for Mayfield. Then you look at, to me, I'm the Romanov thing is more, for me, a question mark than Dobson. I think Dobson's back. I think Dobson's back. I don't know if it'll be an 8 year deal. Maybe it's five or six. But I think the question is Romanov. This is a guy that I hate stats. And I'll preface this. I just hate everything about stats because if you trust what you're watching, you don't have to worry about the stats. Now there's underlying numbers, like don't look at plus minus. But this was a guy that always chased the hits, which is why he got into a lot of trouble in Montreal, which is why Montreal essentially moved on from him. He gets here, he kind of learns to pick his spots and becomes effective, but at times he falls back to the chasing hits. I mean, there was a couple of times this past year where he goes to lay the hip check and his controller died. And then he's out of position and that impacts everything. And I think I like Romanov. I think he's a great player. I think he brings a thing that's not that stats can't calculate. That energy, the ability to hit, you can't really calculate that. That being said, he's dealt with injuries. And are the Islanders willing to sign him long term? Like I think for me, $5 million annually at 5 years is something I was looking towards. But do the Islanders even want to go 5 years with that? There's going to be modified trade clauses added to that. So for me, the question mark is, you look at your left side. I think Pelech's going to be here. One, if they draft Schaefer, they're going to work together this summer. I think Pelech is a mentor to Schaefer or to Isaiah George. Like your left side is going to be, if you get Schaefer in a couple of years, it's probably Schaefer, George, and Pelech. And Pelech towards the end of his year, maybe Romanov's in that. So the question is, how much does Darche value him? I think there's a benefit to having Romanov on your team, but when you look at that future, I don't know. I don't know if Romanov's, and now if you trade Romanov, you're going to just do what you did at the draft. You know, you can reverse that.
Do you expect Isaiah George to make the team out of training camp this season?
I think it all depends, right? If they bring Romanov back, and let's say they drafted Schaefer and they think he's ready. I don't think he's ready personally. I think I've talked to Rocco about this. Like, go play college hockey. Don't go back to junior. Go play college hockey. Go play a year at Penn State or Michigan State or whatever. Because go play against men and get – and then when your season ends, maybe you join them. But if they believe Schaefer is the real deal and he's ready to go and they do keep Romanov, where are you putting George?
Now, Steph, I just want to hop back to Romanov quick.
Yeah.
You began to sort of mention his value. What do you think he would net in return? Do you think it's like a late first? Do you think maybe they could get a mid-rounder, sort of what they gave up for him? Because for me, I believe they traded number 13 the year they got him. I don't think who's ever drafting 13 is – who. Ironically, I think it's the Canadians, but I don't think they're giving up that – like a team in that position is giving up the pick for Romanov. I think – maybe you get a late first type deal because you do have to pay this guy as well.
Well, the other question is you know, there are some really talented defensemen in this draft, but there's a drop off after Schaefer. So maybe a team, I'm not saying San Jose would do it, but there might be teams that really want a defenseman. And through the first round, let's say 12, 13, 14, those defensemen are gone. You know, does a later team, like you said, I think a late first round, you could get Romanov. I think you can. Maybe you add a conditional pick or things like that. But I think he's worth a late first round, early second. It really depends on what team. But I think there's such a need for young defensemen in this league. And somebody values Romanov a lot. And maybe the Islanders have, you know, depends how contract negotiations go. And he is an RFA. So that does help a lot in terms of you're trading him, that the other team has the ability to talk with him and he can't dictate a lot. I think he's arbitration eligible. But yeah, I think a late first round pick for Romanov, maybe a conditional third or whatever, could get the job done. But I'm not trying to be a cliche or a cop-out, but it really depends what team he's going to and what their assets are.
Yeah. So we did this on our Patreon episode where we had like a little stay or go segment. Just a couple of guys to throw at you that are RFAs. I feel like there's just like there's destined to probably be like a few surprises, and I'm going to add one UFA. Tony DeAngelo, Scott Perunovich, Maxim Siplikov. We could start with those three.
Like, yeah. So
you think they'll stay?
Well, you're not getting D'Angelo at the price you got him. That's number one. And then you have to dictate, well, what does your right side look like? A lot of these, you know, a lot of these questions are going to be answered depending on what, like, do they move? I don't think they're moving Dobson, but if they move Dobson, all right, you need a right side defenseman. Here comes Tony DeAngelo, right? But I don't think D'Angelo will be back just because I think he could get two and a half on the open market, depending on what team is. And I don't think the Islanders could afford to pay a guy like that. What was it? You said Siplikov. I think Siplikov's back. He'll get a prove it year, maybe a 2 year deal.
What about Holmstrom?
Is he going to be back? Oh, 1,000%.
You never know.
Yeah, unless he got offered. I mean, I think Holmstrom's back. I think there's a lot of – I think he's going to be a really good player for this team for a long time just because I love his defensive
game.
And I think whether he's a second liner – that's the other thing too. If he's on your fourth – like, it depends how everything works out. But if he's your third line guy, that shouldn't be a knock. Like, that just makes your team so much deeper. Like, to me, I've been
saying – Steph, what do you think he gets? Because you and I had a conversation a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I'd give him like – 5x5, 5x5.5. Like, you didn't seem to think that was crazy at all. I see people throwing out lower AAVs, and I'm just like thrilled. Like, okay, sure. If you can get him for less than that, fine. But I think he's like a future 50, 60 point guy regularly.
Right. So if you get him at five, I mean, that's a steal, in my opinion. So that's a, like, Timmy with Dobson, we could talk to Dobson in a little bit about, I think you might get more than eight, maybe even more than nine. I know it sounds crazy, but with the market value and how it grows and what he's valued in a couple of years. I know Rocco's shaking, I just think if they believe in Dobson, I'm not saying you have the fans have to believe, but if they truly believe in Dobson, signing him to an 8 year deal at 9 or 9.15, and then in a couple of years, he is that guy, and he's 14, 13 and a half, 14 million open market. It's still a steal. Look at Sorokin. Everyone complained about the Sorokin deal. I know he's got to be a little better at times.
It's a good deal now.
It's a great deal now. So people love to, you know, for me, contracts, you can't judge until they're done. Let's say Dobson gets signed to an 8 year deal and he's never the 70 point guy, but they win a cup. Every contract in the team, if you win the cup, to me is worth it. That's how I look at these contracts. And then what was the third guy you said?
Perunovich.
So I don't know if he'll be back, but I also, I think he could be a guy that plays in Bridgeport, to be perfectly honest. Obviously Wah fell out of favor with him. Really, I mean, in that game against the Rangers, Matt Rempe. I mean, no one boxed out Matt Rempe that entire game. I think Pulak was a recipient of failed attempts there as well. So I didn't love the way. I think I asked too. People asked too about the, well, was it about the games played with having to do with the conditions on the trade? It was 20, so he was never getting to that, even if he played. So I don't think that was an issue. But I'd probably say no to Scott Perunovich. unless he's willing to. But I think some other team, I mean, he's a Hobey Baker winner. Some other team is probably gonna want him. But you offer him his qualifying offer. I'm pretty sure he's an RFA. I don't think he's a group six. But yeah, you might as well offer him and just have him say no, because the Islanders know that there's gonna be injuries. You might as well have many depth options that have any NHL experience on the back end. Just stash him in Bridgeport. Makes Bridgeport better.
No Perunovic or D'Angelo. Going to be a rough season.
I'm not saying I think D'Angelo. Like, I think D'Angelo is a really good fit, but he might have priced himself out. I know D'Angelo wants to be back, and he wants to be close to the Philadelphia Jersey area. So if the Islanders offered him 1.5, and I'm just throwing this out there, the Flyers offered him 2.5, or the Devils offered him 2.5. I don't think he'd go back to the Rangers. Like, he's probably going to take the money, which I don't blame him. He deserves it. He played really, really well. I think he fell off a little bit after that first 2 weeks of just being high on being back in the NHL. But yeah, I think he might just price himself out on the Islanders, and that's good for him.
One more question for me. You mentioned Cizikas a couple of different times. What do you think his value is around the league, and do you think the Islanders are seriously considering shopping him for the final year of his deal?
Yeah, I think it also depends how they view Callum Ritchie. If they think Ritchie could be the fourth line center and they maybe get a center, or they move Barzal and they keep Pageau, you need a spot for Ritchie so you can move a Cizikas. I think value... Islander fans overvalue their guys, like every NHL team overvalues their guys. And I think a guy like Cizikas, I think there's a lot of guys like Cizikas, Energizer Bunny guys that get in on the forecheck, things like that. But for a playoff team that missing that kind of spark, maybe, I think a third, I think it's a third.
Just don't know how you guys could do that to the locker room. Terrible.
You're well, all they got rid of two already, so you might as well get the third, right? No, I mean, Cizikas is an easy person to say just because out of all the players on this team, he has zero trade protection. And you're trying to get yourself, what is it, $2.5 million he makes? If you kind of want to make a little bit of room, and you have guys to fill his role, you're not training Zekas.
The Martins need a babysitter.
Well, that's Marner's job.
Well, does it become easier? I was just gonna say. I mean, that was
Greeny. Shut up. No, go ahead.
No, I guess the last part of that was like, does it potentially become easier to move him in the middle of the season when like actual salary is less than is? No,
all
I mean, like,
I heard that's Marner's job.
Yeah, you heard Mitch Marner. I'm actually asking an actual question.
You learned that at Syracuse Journalism School?
Absolutely. if his actual salary halfway through the season is like, 1.25, whatever, is that, like, does he become easier to move at the trade deadline, valuable player, a lot cheaper with actual money owed?
Well, the question is, if you move at the deadline with, what, does he have 2 years left or three? I think it's just one.
I think one year after this.
Yeah, 2 years total, I think.
Yeah, 2 years total, yeah.
So okay.
It did update.
At the deadline, you might have to retain. That's the thing, too, is I think the Islanders, obviously they had to do it with Bailey, but for a guy like Pageau, the reason I'm saying is you wait till next year, this up 2026 deadline, is maybe you don't have to retain a playoff team. Maybe he's paying you more. So I think for Cizikas, it's just the sense of, is it, for example, let's say a team really wanted Yanni Gourde. I'm not saying he's the same player as Cizikas, but let's say the guys that get on the forecheck work their butt off, and a playoff team is missing a kind of guy like that, you might not have to retain it all. I mean, there's always a little bit of retainment with years left, but I just think for Cizikas, it's, you got rid of 2/3 of that fourth line. You have young centers coming in, whether it's this year with Richie, whether it's next year with Denny Nelson, other guys where you need, again, like I said, got to get away from the fourth line mentality. Callum Ritchie's on your, or Kamil Bednarik in a couple of years. I think Kamil Bednarik is a better third line center than Denny Nelson. I think Denny Nelson would be a great fourth line center. So you got to have room for these guys. And like you were saying too, the evaluation period, you're evaluating the NHL team, but also Darch is going to keep a good eye on these guys in college and look at and see what, you could tell, like I said, you could tell already right now which players probably fit which roles, and you want to have the opening, whether it's like, oh, well, what are you going to do now? Well, it's about next year, the stop gaps, things like that. So I think if the Islanders can move a guy like Cizikas, who was loved in that room, he's a great guy to talk to, and he's had a great career with the Islanders. But if you want to create some cap space to just be allowed to maybe add extra money to a defense, or add a little extra money to a Dobson deal, and you're looking around your roster and, well, in a couple of years, we already have a replacement there. Do we need to keep, hold on? I think that's how they're going to look at this.
All right, all good stuff. I think we're ready for the Q&A, right?
Let's get into it. Patreon questions. If you want to submit questions for future episodes, subscribe to the Patreon.
All right. So we got a bunch of questions. We'll just start at the top, work our way down. This is Arouse Conpoyo. If you guys know their actual first names, please jump in. But Arauz Compoyo first says, RFAs, any potential targets in the market or current aisles potentially being targeted by other teams?
Well, I think Dobson's a guy that could definitely get offer sheeted depending on how that goes. I mean, it's hard to look at other... I don't really know how many other teams the Islanders are going to go after their RFAs. I don't know if Darch is going to do that off the bat. Like I said, you have to give up so much with these offer sheets. But yeah, I think Dobson can surely be an offer sheet. I don't think any team would dare offer sheet Lou. But with a new time GM in here, who's probably a little rattled, excuse me, whether he admits it or not, you want to throw a wrench into Darch plans, offer sheet Dobson and see how it goes. Because I think, one, you're going to learn a lot about Darch and how, like, whoever said it before, we were talking about, you know, cards close to the vest. He might say that Dobson's part of his core. Then he gets offered and goes, you know what, take him. Right? So I think it's good to see them, maybe another team just test Darch to see what he's about.
What do you think that number would be?
Ugh. I don't
put you on
to
the
be
spot.
Honest,
on a Dobson
honest,
offer sheet?
You yeah, on a Dobson. Like, what is the number that Darch completely walks away from Dobson and takes the draft
well,
pick?
Well, you have to remember
the
is,
compensation, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. And also, I don't remember the tiers off the top of my head, but you have to remember, for offer sheets to work, the player has to sign it.
Mm-hmm.
So Dobbs can say, listen, they want to offer sheet me and give me this. I want to be here. I want this. It could help the Islanders, in all fairness, or it could hurt them. And so I don't, to be honest, I don't remember the tiers off the top of my head to offer what the compensation would be. It'd be a lot. But also, too, is, you know, it's, I don't know if you want to give up Dobson. To me, I don't think if you draft Schaefer, I don't think Dobson should be moved. I think if anything, that makes – not to even pair them together. I just think having two guys that could produce offensively, I think it's important. I know I just dodged your question completely because I don't have an answer for it, but I apologize.
All good. So we'll go to the next question. This is from Kyle. We haven't talked much about the draft so far. He just wants to know, are you hearing anything about the Islanders' plan? Is Schaefer still the consensus favorite? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, we know Darch is, he said what he said. I don't think he's going to trade the pick. I think he's going to ask for everything. Like, for example, the San Jose Sharks, like, you want Schaefer that bad, give us Dickinson. They're going to say, well, we're not giving you Dickinson. Exactly. And if the Sharks are willing to give you a ton for Schaefer, that says more about how much he should double check and be like, oh, if they're giving up this much for Schaefer, then why are we trading Schaefer? You know, why are we trading the pick? I would keep him. They know they talked to Schaefer. They brought Schaefer out to dinner last night, and I know they spoke to him today. And I just think what the Islanders need. I know the Hagan story is a really cool story, and I think one thing you look at too is if Hagan wants to be an Islander at some point down the line, he's gonna be. Which is why I think you draft Schaefer because you need the defenseman. But there's so many ways Higgins could be an Islander. Whether it's the Islanders trade back up in the draft, whether he pulls, you know, waits to the end of his NCAA career and signs. But number three, let's say he starts career with somebody else. Sign in free agency when he's in his prime of his career. He could, you know, if he really wants to be an Islander, he can. You can't reverse it though. Schaefer doesn't want to be an Islander. I mean, he's not going to force his way to the Islanders or anything like that. So I think at some point, Higgins will be an Islander in his career, which is why I think that it's okay if you don't draft him. You'll get him at some point. I think if he really believes in his heart that he wants to be an Islander at some point, whether it's waiting out, trade up, or free agency, going and signing with the Islanders, I think one day he'll be there. So for that reason, for me, is that can't happen with Schaefer. And I think Schaefer's that good.
100%. All right. Next question is from Sam. He's asking about Jason Robertson in Dallas. His name's been coming up last couple of days. He wants to know if he's a fit. And then as a follow-up, would Noah Dobson, pending he signs an extension, plus the Colorado first-round pick next year, be enough for Jason Robertson?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. I don't think Robertson's going anywhere. I think this is a tactic by the agent to get him as much money as physically possible. I mean, why would the Stars, unless they really can't come to terms on an extension, give up? Now, to me, yeah, I saw there was articles, whatever, like Dobson, Robertson, one for one's not happening. The Colorado first is great, except when you remember that Colorado is probably going to be good again. So it's a late first round, which to me is always a late first round, early second. It's similar. I don't think that's enough to get it done, to be quite honest. Now, I know Dallas needs defensemen, but they have a guy named Miro Heiskanen. They have other guys. Like, I don't think they need a Dobson as much as the Islander fans are pushing that they need a Dobson. And I think, you know, I think what Dallas needs is just solid defenders. And I think we obviously know where Dobson falls short. So Dobson maybe in Colorado's first gets a conversation started. But to be honest, if you know, Robertson's fantastic. And he obviously is a clear need for the Islanders, but he's young. And I think there's no way he leaves Dallas, in my opinion.
I agree. I think it's all just rumors and speculation. I don't think J-Rob leaves. He's too good.
Yeah,
you don't give up a player that's that good and that young.
I don't think Dallas gets. I mean, Dallas got. Remember, after they lost Stankoven.
Right.
They got obviously who they got. Rantanen is a great, but I mean, you're a perennial cup contender every year. Why would you lose a piece? Dobson could turn out to be really, really good, but this is Robertson. I mean, he
Yeah.
doesn't become available often.
And I don't think they have. I mean, I know they had a solid prospect pool a couple years ago, but I think most of those guys are up now. So they're not exactly going to have a ton of guys coming up to replace a guy like Robertson, even if you try to do it by committee.
And like I like Sagan, even Rantanen's not super, super young, but like I like
Yeah.
Sagan and guy like
And
Ben,
not
like
there.
they're gonna leave. Robertson's what, 26,
I think he's
25?
the same age as Dobson, actually.
Right.
25.
Yeah. If
Yeah.
you're Dallas, I don't. If you're Dallas, you don't let him leave. You figure out a way to make it work.
I agree.
All right, last couple of questions here. Next one is from Riley. He wants to know, what are some under the radar names you could see the Islanders going after either in trade or free agency?
So I got four for you. You're gonna hate the first one. It's not. Don't worry.
Bleep
bleep Thackeray.
So
All right,
I
that's the
was.
second one. That's the
What'd you
second one.
say?
We bleeped.
We bleep
Ah, so funny.
it.
I heard to keep an eye on Brock Besser. Now I know he has injury history. I know that he Vancouver wasn't willing to pay him, but just keep an eye on Brock Besser. I don't think, I think he asked for a lot of money because he has to deal with like, hey, if I have to stay in Vancouver and deal with this, you know what show every day, you better be overpaying me. I think if he goes to market, I wouldn't be shocked if he take less than what was rumored, right? I think obviously it's a clear need. He has injury concerns, which you hope are behind him. But I mean, that's a guy the Islanders could use, and he's not the upper echelon free agents where if you miss out on a Ehlers or Marner, like he's there. And I think maybe the Islanders are a spot, but I would just keep an eye on him. But also,
He'd be a
I think
good pickup.
Victor Olofsson's a guy from you guys too. And I remember I know he hasn't had it in a couple of years, but this is a guy that I remember just watching kill teams on the power play. I think it was like 2019. I think he had 11 power play goals. I know it's gone down the last couple of years. And obviously, he went from a Buffalo team where he was, what, a top six guy to going to Vegas, right? Where he's still a top middle six guy. But I don't know. Something about him on the being like a fit on the power play, being a depth forward that could score. I like him a lot. I've always liked his game. Anthony Beauvillier is a guy for me too.
Oh
Because I
God!
know
Don't
how.
get greeny going.
Well, no. What I'll say
Hell
here,
yeah!
the only reason for Beauvillier is that he had a good playoff, obviously with the Capitals. I forgot the point totals, but he loved being an Islander, and I know he didn't want to leave. And obviously, the Horvat deal had to happen. But I'm sure, like we talk about getting those depth. The Islanders have so much depth, but a guy like Beauvillier, if he could rediscover, I mean, maybe coming to the Islanders is exactly what he needs after taking a tour around the entire NHL
It's a
at a
VOD
1
signing.
million. I mean, listen, my
It's
biggest
a
thing too is
bad signing.
he's best
Oh,
friends with
stop
Bar.
it.
He's best friends with Barzal, and you want to keep clients happy. You know how much that would make Barzal just not feel better about everything. But if you could sign him for $1 million, or even less, let's say it's less than $1 million. Who knows what Beauvillier is getting on a 1 year prove it deal? I don't see why you don't do that, especially if you again, they have depth. But to me, Beauvillier is a better than a Hudson Fasching.
You know
He's
what?
better than
The
a. I'm
Islanders may not
okay.
make the Islanders may not make the playoffs, but Matt Barzal and Beauvillier can have a sleepover and sing Justin Bieber
And
together.
listen, you could
I'd
trade
only.
Beauvillier. You could trade. I mean, again, this is just names I picked out in terms of depth, guys. I just think Beauvillier would do it for cheap because I know he really wants to be an Islander. But not saying you have to do them. And then Trent Frederick, I'm assuming he's going to stay in Edmonton. But those are the guys too that I look at as what Darch is saying about those guys that just know how to head down, go to work. Like I said, I think Edmonton didn't trade for him to lose him. But I do think. Guys like that, like Gord again, would have been on this list if he didn't get re-signed. I think that's what the Islanders are missing is talent that can score, but also bring that grit. Where you look at the fourth line, it's like, great, they have the grit, but they can't score. They could score, and they don't have the grit. I think it's something that the Islanders need to get back to. Is like I said, fourth lines don't have to be just hitters; they could be goal scorers as well. And to me, out of the guys that I mentioned, I think Olsson to me just seems like a really good fit.
I'd only be okay with the Beauvillier signing, honestly, if they got rid of Duclair. What do you think's going to happen with Duclair?
Yeah, I've talked about this a lot in the sense of I don't like talking about it a lot because mental health. We obviously know I'm not gonna TED talk you here, but I don't know what Duclair is going with outside of hockey. I don't know the extent of his relationship with Patrick Roy. I don't know exactly what conversations happened with Patrick Roy before he lashed out on him in the media and after. I don't know the injury, how much it played a part in this. Obviously, Elliot Friedman tweeted out his advanced stats and the speed's down astronomically to the point where like if Duclair can't skate and do what he's got to do, then he might retire. Like that's. Where my mind goes in the sense, if you can't be effective in the way you play, who knows? And I get what you're saying. Speed, like if you're just going to get rid of a speedy guy, might as well. But like, I don't want to sit here and say I'd be shocked either way of what happens with Duclair. I think it helps that Darche is here, to be honest, actually. If there's an issue in Riff with Wah still, I mean, Darche with Brisebois acquired Duclair, who had success in Tampa. So I think if there are still issues, lingering issues with Wah, and they want to make it work, Darche is the best guy to have there mediating that. But if there are issues where you have to mediate at that point, I think you trade him. I don't think they're going to buy him out because that's stupid. I don't think Duclair's going to agree to a mutually part ways because he's leaving a lot of money on the table and he's his own agent. So, like, he's not going
Is
to get
he
that deal
actually?
again.
I didn't know that.
So he's his own agent,
Think I realized that.
which I think hurt him a lot in terms of having to sign 1 year, 2 year deals. I'm not saying teams took advantage of him, but I mean, they definitely did. So I think when you get a 4 year deal that Duclair got from the Islanders, I mean, that's the longest contract he's ever gotten in his career. So is he going to mutually part ways? I think out of respect for Duclair and everything, if they don't want him back, and I think if he's healthy and mentally ready to go, he'll be back. He needs to be a big part of this team. They'll work on putting him in a place like a Montreal where he could go, and they're not gonna make it hell for Duclair. I think that's the right way to go about it. I don't think that's fair, especially when Patrick Waugh is the one that brought him in, and he's the one that kind of made it an awkward situation. But yeah, I think Beauvillier is also one of those signings where you kind of wait till the end of the summer and see where you're at and what you need. And if you have the space for him and he's not signed, you go and get him.
I was
If
waiting
you
for
have
one name that never came, and it was Mangiapane, but we could go to the next question.
You're a big Mangiapane guy. Is that
He's
the Italian
good.
in you?
No,
Oh, okay.
he's good. He's a
Last
scrappy
name ends in a
player.
vowel.
I like Bo
Exactly.
too. I would take Beauvillier on the cheap. I wouldn't mind that. Fourth line. Get some
Just
speed in there.
to
Last
see
name
Jack's
sounds like it ends in
reaction.
a vowel.
What's that?
Last name sounds like it ends in a vowel.
It does not.
Beauvillier.
It does not.
Bo should come back just for Jack's reaction.
Next
But
question.
whatever. Next question is. This is from MK9494, Mitch Marner. We all want Mitch Marner. We think we have a chance to get Mitch Marner, but do we know if Darche even pursues this and makes a legit offer?
I think he's going to make a legit offer. I just think that I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's a crazy, great story, and you have the Matt Moore. And I think there's Matt, they're close. So I don't think it's a, oh, we just throw him. Like, I think there, if Martin's coming to Long Island, Matt Martin's playing a huge part in this. So is Barzal. But I just think with where the cap is for the Islanders, and again, where that evaluate, I don't know if the Islanders, like, if they got Marner, are they a cup contender? No. I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done. So I think you're kind of doing the exact opposite of what I talked about earlier in terms of evaluating and figuring it out and doing the things the right way. I think Marner is kind of jumping the gun. I think if the Islanders were a step ahead where, they got past the first round in back-to-back years, and you kind of need that kind of, I know he's been whatever in the playoffs, but you're one player like that away, then you throw everything at the wall. I just think the Islanders aren't there yet. So I think it might hurt them to go for that. Like, Ehlers to me is probably a better fit in terms of what they want. I know that the Islanders had interest in Ehlers at last year's draft. They talked with Winnipeg often about potentially getting him. I know they ended up not trading him, but yeah, I don't think Marner is going to happen. I just think cap wise, it's not going to work. And where the Islanders are, I just don't think it's the best interest. It's not going to hurt. If I got him, I'm not going to sit here and say it was a bad move. I just think you're going to have to give up a lot cap wise. You have to clear a lot of cap space as well, where you might get hurt in terms of retaining or getting fleeced in certain deals just to try to make it work. But what I will say about the Islanders and Fradens, I think you're going to hear their name a lot more than you heard under Lou. As not being like, oh yeah, five teams, then the Islanders there. Like, I think the Islanders will be top two or three in a lot of these conversations. I don't ultimately think it'll work out though.
All right. Last two. This one's super quick one, just because Jack brought it up before. Backup goaltenders. With Varley's status up in the air, do you see any backup goalies that could potentially be targeting?
Riddich, I think, was actually, or Vladar or Riddich. I think you said Vladar earlier. I think that's a
Vladar.
great option. Soderblom is another one for me. From the Chicago, I know he ended up getting traded and everything like that, but I think that's another guy. I think he's an RFA as well. But you have to remember too is I think Hogberg kind of lost. He did so well, got injured. I don't think he was the same after the hand injury or whatever finger injury it was. And I think what we saw from his past NHL experience came back to bite him, where he just wasn't that good. So do you trust him as a number two? I don't think so. I think he kind of blew that. But you have to remember too is, I mean, we all spoke to Varley. I thought Varlamov was coming out and saying that he was done. When he walked out for his executive meetings, I thought he was going to retire right on the spot. He's on pace. I mean, like, everything that he said, and if you believe what he said, I don't have any reason to believe he's lying, that he's going to be backing up and ready to go for next year. That being said, every year he gets hurt. So you have to have a stable backup or, excuse me, a third string in Bridgeport. Maybe Hogberg and get somebody else. But I really wouldn't put, that much money into it. So I think Varlamov, if, this injury, also you have to remember too, is I know he's older. What he got work on, it's something that's been ailing him for years. Like, the injury that kept happening every year, where were they going that, what? It was every year was the same road trip. It was Arizona, Vegas, Colorado, that trip. Every time he got hurt, just doesn't want to play out there. But it was the same
It's the
injury.
altitude.
Right. It was the same injury every time. And if you believe what he said is, this has been years of nagging and trying to work through it. It was best I got the surgery. If you're an Islander fan or just the Islanders in general, you hope, okay, that's behind you now. Maybe another injury pops up. But I do think Varlamov's your backup next year. And I think if need be for spot starts, you have Hogberg. But their financial situation, I don't think they go out there and, I know Jack, you want to give money to a backup. I don't think they need to do that, in all honesty. I don't think Sorokin should be playing 65 games. I think his range where you get the most out of him, and you could debate is 8.25 too much for a guy that only plays 50 to 55 games. But I mean, look at the Cup years, right? I know we're going back a while and none of us were alive to watch it, but Chico Resch and Billy Smith really didn't, they played, not split exactly, but when it came to the playoff times, Billy Smith just went and was ready. And I think for Sorokin, it'll benefit him a lot. Where if there was a 1A, 1B, if Varlamov's healthy, where like they do split enough. Now you have to obviously see what the numbers are. And if Varlamov's struggling, you ride Sorokin. But I think Sorokin at his best when he's playing probably between 50 and 55. Once you go over that mark, you're fatiguing him. He's not a Vasilevskiy, which who had back surgery. He's not other guys unless Shesterkin. Like I just don't think that's him, and that's okay as long as you understand that and play to his strengths where you're not killing him every year.
100%. All right, so we'll wrap it up with this last one from MCH or MSCH 477. He wants to know if you could make one prediction on a player the Islanders will acquire in the offseason that is not their 2025 draft pick and is not Cal Ritchie. Who is it?
All right, who are they going to go get? I'm going to stick with Olsen. I don't know. That's just a name that's been in my head a lot. I think he's a good fit. I don't know what anyone's talking about. Maybe he goes back to Vegas, but they have all their, they've, I mean, they always figured out, but I don't know. I think Olsen might be a guy. I'll stick with him.
Cool. And actually, bonus question, Ethan wants to know Zyrtec or Allegra for your allergies.
So it's actually Allertec, which is the non-name
Yeah,
brand.
okay.
So
I
you
get it. You
lose.
shop at Costco or the
Yeah,
generic. Yeah,
Costco. So
congratulations.
we'll count Zyrtec. You win that one. Yeah,
Yes.
Zyrtec. I also have a terrible deviated septum, which makes all of this
So
just
do
so
I.
much worse.
And it sucks.
Yeah, it's brutal. I was supposed to get surgery on that, and then I got COVID, and then that was it. But yeah,
Brutal.
brutal.
All
Do I
right.
sound good? Thank
Sound great.
you. Appreciate it.
Steph's flu game.
Yeah, we just bought an hour long pod. Oh, was it an
Yeah.
hour and a half? So there you go.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Gatorade.
Sponsored by,
Here we
well,
go.
sponsored by Allertech.
And I would say.
All right. Are we wrapping up?
Yep.
All right. Everyone, thank you for listening. Follow Steph at Steph underscore Rosner, the Elmonters, NHL.com. Talk to you guys soon.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Io's house in the middle.